This week on Brilliant, I was lucky enough to have the amazing opportunity to sit down and have a conversation with Jeff freaking Belanger. So kick back and enjoy this conversation with a New England legend. I'm Alan Brill. Welcome to Brilliant, a podcast from the mind of Brill. But warning, it gets dark in here. This week, I am beyond excited to welcome a legendary guest to Brilliant. He's the host, writer, and producer of the award-winning, Emmy-nominated New England Legends series on PBS and currently available on Amazon Prime Video, author of over a dozen books, and host of the award-winning weekly podcast, New England Legends, writer and researcher for every episode of Ghost Adventures, and editor of Shadowzine. He has a new book, Wicked Strange, hitting the shelves on September 2nd, and he's here this week to class us join up a little bit. A New England legend himself, Jeff Belanger. Welcome to Brilliant.
Hey, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Now, whenever you started with Ray Oger doing the New England Legends podcast, the massive task of chronicling New England's legends 1 week at a time, did you think you'd still have enough to be making episodes 411 shows later and counting, or?
So the podcast was born from the TV series, which began, oh God, like 2013, something like that. And making TV shows for PBS is incredibly expensive. We had to pay for everything. It was myself and Tony Dunn, who was my partner on the project. We paid all the costs. We paid for everything. We did all the work ourselves. They gave us absolutely nothing. They gave us nothing to air it. And so we did it because we just love these stories. And because we're doing it in our free time as like a side gig, you know, we could only do so many because we need to do silly, weird things like eat and have shelter.
Sure.
So, and as anyone in the who's interested in the paranormal can attest, like, yeah, you got to have the day job. So, but then I was like, there's so many great stories. So the podcast started. I'm like, we're going to get to all these stories I wanted to get to. And I think early on there was a moment where I was like, oh no, maybe we'll run out. But then the audience, it started to really catch on and people would listen and write to us and say, hey, have you ever heard about, like, you know, the Cobble Mountain Critter? And I went, no, what is that? You know, and then you have your next episode. So now at this point, what's great is the stories are practically crowdsourced. And it's which is cool when like a community sort of evolves around a show. You know, you just get to ride the wave. So it's gotten a lot easier now because so many people are like, you should do this weird story in my hometown. And those are my favorites, the one not everybody knows about.
Rather like the super localized stories.
Yeah, because every town has it. And if you grew up there, you know it. But if you didn't grow up there, you probably never heard of it. And so I love celebrating the weird of every community, man. That's the stuff. You know, we live in such a weird time where everything is just getting so homogenized. You know, every town looks like the other. There's McDonald's and Home Depot and Walmart and whatever. And the stuff that makes us unique now is our weird side. And we don't share that with just anybody. You know, we got to trust you. And that's the best. You know, when someone's like, all right, you want to see something strange? Come with me. I'll show you. It's not here on the busy, you know, Miracle Mile. It's off on a back road and you go, all right, let's go for a ride.
Absolutely. And it's so important to chronicle these because so many of them, like you said, are localized and they're oral. So we're with a generation of losing all these great stories if it doesn't get passed down.
Well, also too, some of them, a legend is whether you believe in UFOs or aliens or ghosts, right, or whatever or not, I don't care. It's irrelevant. The story becomes real in every sense of the word. You know, it's born and it can marry others and it can travel and it can die. And legends die when we stop talking about them. So I look at like what we're doing is with the podcast, especially, it's just it's a picture. A picture is a moment in time. When you take a picture of anything, you've captured that instant. And then if you take a picture of like a landscape, it changes a minute later, not by much. But, right, you know, weeks, months, years, it changes a lot. So that's all we're doing. We're taking a snapshot of where the legend is at right now as best we heard it.
Exactly. And as you said, the world's homogenized. It's turned into a big box world. And how we filter things to our regional perspective is so important. And it makes me wonder now with the internet, these stories are preserved, but are they preserved different? Like I had to cover Spearfinger a few, I didn't have to, as requested, Spearfinger a few episodes ago, and I'm certainly not a member of the Cherokee Nation. I'm, not been to Appalachia. I'm like, this a-hole in North Missouri are going to be able to do this justice? It's, filtered through my perspective.
Yeah.
It changes a little bit. So do you think the internet is helpful or harmful?
Yeah.
Right on.
Of course, yeah. So the good news is we have access to so much information. The bad news is our tiny little brains are not equipped to handle so
Right,
much
yeah.
information. I was talking to someone earlier today about how, I mean, you think about this. Just think back like 150 years, which is nothing in the realm of human evolution. It's an eye blink. 150 years ago, the big news would be like, you got a couple more chickens for your farm. That would be the big news for days.
Around here, it still is.
It still is. Oh, good. Yeah,
But
it is. But, so there's no TV, there's no internet, there's no even literacy is still really low. Newspapers are pointless. People can't read anyway. So it's just, wow, Alan's farm got four new chickens. Like that's the big goings on in town. And now we've got so much information just before we've had our morning coffee
yeah.
that we're just bombarded. So on the one hand, if you know how to look stuff up and research, you can learn quite a bit and you can take a deep dive and see where stuff comes from. The problem is a lot of us aren't doing that. We're just looking at memes
Yeah, for
and
sure.
going, that sounds true. I don't
Yeah.
like that political party, so that's probably true. Or I do like that political party, so it is whatever. It's not true. So we're filtering everything through just a couple simple lenses. And that's why I love these stories because they don't care what your political leanings are. They don't care what your religious leanings are. It's just a weird story. And it sticks around because we keep it around. Each community is keeping it around, is talking about it. Otherwise, I wouldn't hear about it. I don't,
Yeah.
I only hear about them when they make the radar. And so I just tell it as best I can and let the chips fall. And I think they're sort of like a sermon from the past. All of them are. Why are we talking about that one house being haunted or that one monster out in the woods? Well, what happened? And what happened out there that we're still sort of making peace with it or trying to? And so we tell the stories. And I know the stories will change, they'll evolve, they'll change depending on who's telling them or who the audience is. But there's also some nugget in there, some piece of important wisdom that makes it from one person to the other. Because if I told you a story that sounded so ludicrously stupid, you wouldn't repeat it.
Right.
You'd say like, ah, come on, man, and you'd walk away. But if it's I told you something and there was something inside of you that stirred a little bit, you went, I don't think that's, but maybe you'd tell someone else and go, hey, did you hear about the out in the woods by the old, lake, this thing that happened, the old abandoned, cabin. And someone else goes, oh, I heard about that too. And next thing you know, there you go. You're going out late at night, and we're going to make a movie about you one day. And what horrible thing happened to you out there in the woods?
Right. With over 6 million downloads as New England Legends has, what advice can you give a hopeful podcaster just starting out? I'm asking for a friend.
Asking for a friend. Well, tell your friend, let's call him Schmalen Krill.
Right.
Yeah. So no, I think it's pretty simple. You have to show up regularly, first of all. When someone does a podcast 2 or 3 times a year, you're just not serious.
Right.
And your audience isn't waiting for anything because who knows when you'll be back, if ever. So part of it is just showing up day after day and doing your thing and sharing your story and getting better at it and listening to it I don't know why some of them take off. And that I'm not just talking about mine. I mean, I think about some of the ones that are wildly popular and you listen to them and you go, really? People like this? And you can't, sometimes you can figure out why. It's real slick, it's really entertaining, real full of energy, well edited. You're like, oh, okay, I can see why that's popular. But
Right.
sometimes you can't tell. I don't know. But I do know that if your passion for the subject comes through and you keep showing up, other people are going to start showing up with you and they're going to stick with you. And the best advice I could give is one I stole, frankly. to ask people to tell others about your show, because that's how people find podcasts. Nobody but nobody Googles, what's a good podcast I should listen to? I mean, I guess maybe two people do.
Right.
But what happens is someone sees someone and goes, I got to tell you about this podcast I've been listening to. It's so much fun. I think you'd like it. It's called this. And that's, I know that's how there was a podcast I listened to. It was years ago. It was, Finding Richard Simmons. Did you ever listen to it?
No.
So my best friend growing up, John, musician, and I mean, I bet I care about as much about Richard Simmons as you do, honestly. Like, you know who he is. He was on
Right.
TV. He was the guy, whatever. I was like, okay, yeah, that guy. And so he's like, I'm telling you, it was a 6-part series. And I found out later, because I listened to the whole thing. I binged it because I was like 3 minutes in and I was like, oh my God, I'm not going anywhere. This is amazing. And I found out the guy that produced it was trying to make a visual documentary about what happened to Richard Simmons. He was this uber famous guy who just quit the spotlight, and he wanted to know why and how. And so he couldn't get funding for a video documentary, which is so expensive to make. So he did it audio, and he made such a compelling story that each one you're like, then what happened? You know, and it just went from the next to the next to the next. Now Richard Simmons has since passed away since this has been made. But at the time, I was like, this is just great storytelling, great editing, and a great premise. And he made me really, really care what happened to Richard Simmons. Whereas before I started listening to it,
Yeah.
I kind of didn't care. I was like, eh, just that pop culture guy from the 80s.
Right.
So, you know, show up, stick with it, and try to get better at everyone you do.
Sound advice. I'll pass that along to him.
Yeah, let him know. Let him know.
I'll let him
Dream,
know
dreams can come true. You can get, you
that.
know, you never know. Hey, your email was really funny. I get asked to be on podcasts sometimes, and like, this is a true story. I got an email once from an AOL account. Not disparaging anyone with an AOL account, but it was something I didn't recognize, and it just said, "Hey, would you come on my podcast?" And it was signed Chris Irvin, and I was like, "Delete." I'm like, "I don't know who that is. Never heard of you. Don't. What's your podcast? Introduce me. Tell me anything about it. Tell me why you want me on as a guest." And then, like, it was like, you know, a week or so later, he said, "I really think you should come on. I heard you on my friend Brian's podcast. I get like over 100,000 downloads per episode." At the time, and you know, here's the name of it. And then I looked it up and I went, oh, that's Chris Jericho, the WWE superstar.
Oh, okay.
And that's his legal name, Chris Irvin. And which, by the way, I'm not saying anything that you can't find on Wikipedia. So I was like, oh, I know who that is. And I was like, sure. And I've been on his show several times now. And but I'm like, he's textbook, how not to ask for a guest.
Right.
I'm like, forgive me for not knowing your legal name. And, you know, you should have introduced your show. You should have been like, it's called this. If you've never heard of it, this is where you can listen to some episodes. Everything you did, but you made it funny. And I'm like, oh, he sounds like he'd be fun to talk to.
Right.
So you're already doing
And
something, right?
want to be upfront about everything too. Like,
Yeah.
you're doing me the favorites.
No. Look, I love talking about this subject. I like talking to people. And I find that, you know, we make connections wherever and however they may be. And I don't know, I'm still learning too, you know? I mean, I don't know. I don't know how any of this works. I don't know how the paranormal works. I don't know how any of it does. But I do know that I think the discussion is important.
Yeah.
It's important to have. And from there, we might sort of sort things out.
Right. Now, as you can imagine, growing up in a rural farm town with gravel roads when I was younger, I was really big into skateboarding, naturally. When there's, 13 feet of concrete in the whole town, but
Right.
I get Thrasher magazine and I flip to the back and there's always these neat little things that are for like punk zines that you could send money into and they'd send you like a DIY. Little magazine, and well, how cool would that be if we had something for the supernatural like that? That'd be
I'm gonna put someone on it.
oh no, Shadow Zine is amazing. I get it every month, and
Thank you.
it's really made me excited to check my mail because after you when you become an adult, checking the mail just sucks, and I would go days at a time and I wouldn't do it, and I finally started doing it more regularly just because I felt sorry for the mailman, like he doesn't have a purpose in life. I don't even know why I bother. Just,
Right.
but yeah, and yeah, it's incredible. You do a really good job on it.
Thank you.
And one thing I love is it's all regional voice is telling that you covered you Bridgewater Triangle, Richard S. Stepp, the Haunted Castle in England. And that really makes the perspective of the people who are there. And the August issue with Joshua Darin
Darren,
was,
yeah.
yeah, that was really powerful stuff. It really made change the way I looked at some things.
It was cool because I know people probably accuse me of being woke or whatever. I don't care. Like, stay asleep if you want. But I think you need to seek out perspectives that aren't your own. Because how in the world are you going to grow if you don't do that? If you just surround yourself in an echo chamber, you're done. And what fun is that? I mean, it's none. So Shadowzine was born this year, back in February. So I started in zines. That's how all this started for me. Zines, for those who don't know, is it's magazine, right? But it's not formal. We don't have fancy publishers or distribution or anything. And back in the 1980s, desktop publishing was just getting started. There was so suddenly, back in the 80s, all the media was sort of just centralizing and getting eaten up. There was only a couple of radio companies now, a couple of newspaper companies, and a couple of magazine companies, and only a few TV networks. So all the media was controlled by like a few dozen people. And folks with independent minds were getting sick of it. But a zine, some zines were literally typed on a typewriter or
Yeah.
handwritten, photocopied,
Photocopied.
stapled in the corner, and handed out at like a punk music show or something. And now like independent people had a voice, and it was amazing. And so I was working on underground publications in the 80s and 90s, and I loved it. I loved that we were doing it ourselves. And then this thing called the internet came along, and we were like, printing's expensive, and it's very time consuming, all the layout and everything. And we were like, wait a minute. So for like $120 a year, I can publish unlimited on the internet. And that was the Wild West. Websites could blow up. I had a website in 1999 called ghostvillage.com. We got huge. And I was just, tell me your ghost story. And people from all over the world were submitting their stories. We had message boards. It's like 50,000 pages of content. But then, then something happened around 2010 or so. Social media just took over. And I get it. I get it. You're into ghosts, but you're also into Cajun cooking and Zydeco music and knitting. I don't know. Pick your subjects, whatever you're interested in. And you're like, I like your website, Jeff, but if I go to Facebook, I can join groups that have all these things. I get it. I can't compete with that. I don't want to do knitting and I don't want to do Cajun cooking,
Right.
much as I enjoy eating it, right? Like, I get it. I get it. And so social media just killed so many independent websites because everybody would spend all their time on, a few, like the few social media sites. Now, think about this, and by all means, add to the list if I miss any. There's about eight people who control 90% of the internet, and I'm talking YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, which is the same company, Twitter, X, Truth Social, if you want that, TikTok, Reddit. Am I missing any? Like where most people go,
Yeah.
So you got a handful of billionaires that are now dictating what you see and what you don't see, and we're being manipulated. We're
Oh,
being
yeah.
you they've the two greatest tricks they pulled off is for you to think that the service is free and that you're in charge. Neither is true. I know you're not paying on your credit card, but at the same time, you are being sold to, and don't take my word for it. Here's the test. If you're on Facebook, go to your Facebook feed, start at the top, and just start scrolling down and count how many of those are things you actually want to see. How many people are people you follow? How many are like groups you joined? And how many are like, oh, sponsored post? You might like this also, which is sponsored, ad. I scrolled through mine, and I of the first 20 posts, two were people I followed, and one was a group I belonged to. 17 out of 20 were either paid posts. I mean, sort of relevant, right? I mean, it was like
Right.
paranormal stuff, but still paid stuff. And the stuff I wanted to follow, I didn't get to see. And I'm thinking, social media, the only way out of that is to take your foot off the financial gas, to tell your investors, we're going to make a lot less money because we've oversaturated with advertisements. And so an investor's gonna be like, whoa, don't you dare talk about making less profits. So the only thing we could do now, I was like, what's left? And I'm like, I got it. I'm gonna go back 30 years. I'm gonna
Refer
go
back.
old school print. And so I used to do layout. I loved doing page layout. I know how to do it. And I hadn't done it in years and years. And so I started doing page layout, and I started calling my author friends, and I'm like, we're gonna do a zine. No AI, no ads, no digital copies. You can't buy it online. You can't read it online. You pay for it either in person, or you can buy it online and you'll get it mailed to you, a physical print thing. And let's try it. And I'll take all the risk. And
Right
so
on.
we're 8 episodes in, 8 issues in now, and it's been pretty cool to hear people like you say, I dig like the physical print. I like open in the mail, you sit down
Yes.
with it, you hold it, you own it. It can't change. So like if I said something on my website that was like really bad, offensive, wrong, or whatever, and I get some complaints about it, I could log in right now, change it, and you go there and it didn't say what it said yesterday. If I screw up in the zine, well, you have it. I'm stuck.
It's there, yeah.
Something else happened too. I don't know if you heard about this. Last Christmas, Amazon Prime aired It's a Wonderful Life. Movie's been around forever, right?
Right.
They changed some of this, they edited the suicide stuff.
Oh,
And
wow.
film aficionados were like, whoa, that's a sacred cow. You can't mess with It's a Wonderful Life. But they did to get with the times. And so imagine you're a film director who made this thing that's been considered, a holiday staple for how long? 60, 70 years?
Yeah.
Like a long, long time. And someone messed with your stuff after you're dead. Ooh, you
Yeah.
know? So it's being changed. And then I don't know, man. I like the idea that you own physical media, like a book or a magazine or whatever. That doesn't change. It is what it is. It's that's and you have it, and you can hold on to it, and it's real, and you can touch it. And I think that's the only direction left to go now is for something real.
Absolutely. And I have the stupidest question you'll ever get about the zine
Go
is
ahead.
yeah, and the author pictures and the first one you're wearing the black shirt and the arms crossed and sunglasses, and then Richard Estep started doing it and they all did it. Was that planned or was he just kind of mocking you and it carried on?
No, I said like, I don't know, let's look mysterious. I mean,
Okay.
so part of it too is like, I don't know, let's not take ourselves too seriously,
Yeah, well,
but I did want a picture. I wanted author photos because I don't want to hide behind anonymity. I don't think we should do that. This is their real names. That's what they look like, and you can look them up and whatever. I think part of what killed us on the internet was everybody had a screen name,
right.
and you could just be the most awful monster. Because no one knew who you were, and that's just not accountable publishing. But I'm old fashioned. I get it. So yes, the now it's a thing. Now it's our
Yeah.
thing.
I
We're
assumed it
stuck.
was, yeah, I assumed it was a planned thing, but I'm like, a part of me wonders. I'm like, I got him on the screen when I ask him.
Yeah. No. What? It was, yeah. So it's I don't know. We want to be remembered. And yeah, it's been fun. So thank you. Thanks for getting the zine. I appreciate it.
Oh yeah. Now you've been involved with Ghost Adventures since the very beginning.
Yeah.
What's the process for researching a location like or putting the episode together or what have you?
In the beginning, I was doing all the location scouting. So, like, I would be like, okay, here's some possibilities. And then all the research on the history, all the historical background writing, finding all the people that'll appear on camera and stuff like that. Over time, as the show got more successful, I was able to very gladly hand off the scouting part of it to someone else who would just present ideas to Zach on locations, and then Zach would pick one, and then it would come to me. And at that point, I'm told, this is where we're going, make it work. And so I just dig in, and that's the fun part for me. It's like, okay, this is where we're going. Why is this place haunted? And when you ask that question, you got to go back in time. You got to go back and say, well, who lived here? Who died here? Who was here before there was a building? What's the whole history of the place? And then you get to network with folks who've had weird experiences, and find another and another, and then see if those people will come on camera and share their stories. So I sort of give them like all the front-loaded stuff, the history, the witnesses. They explore that, and then turn off the lights, and whatever happens, happens.
Right on. What's that going 29 seasons now?
It was 2008 March when we started, and it is still going, which is amazing. I don't know. So the way the network calls a season is different than the way we do it internally. So I don't even know what it's up to now, but it's been 17 plus years. It's been
That's
amazing.
incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have ever, what's the most memorable experience or, one of the most memorable experiences from researching the show or?
So I was just writing about this place the other day. Penhurst Asylum, right outside of Philadelphia, has always stuck out to me. We were the first show to get in there. I know they've all been in now, but we were the first one. They'd just come under new ownership, when I started working on it, I was like, okay, abandoned asylum, got it. We know what to do. Like, and it's sort of sad how similar the stories are all over the nation.
Yeah.
Abandoned asylums have very similar, chain of events. They were great places. They actually helped. They got overcrowded. They got underfunded. The conditions got awful. And then they were shut down. That story repeats over far too much. So that's what I thought with Pennhurst. But then when I started to dig in, there's a federal law based on what happened at Pennhurst about how you can and can't treat people with mental disabilities. And I spoke to a doctor who worked there, and I spoke to a nurse, and I spoke to patients. And they would tell people when you dropped your loved one off, don't call, don't visit, don't write. It'll mess up the routine. We're the professionals. Trust us. And they were literally keeping people in dog kennels. A nurse I spoke to said her job was to change adult diapers on people that didn't have the ability to, use the bathroom by themselves. They would be chained in beds, and she would just change all the diapers. And by the time she got done, it was time to go back and start again. And some of the patients would rub their feces in their hair and on their skin, not because they're crazy, but because they knew that was the only way they would get a bath and they would get some human contact. And you're like, oh my God. Like, so if you heard people treating like dogs like this,
Oh, yeah.
we'd string them up, right? Like society would be like, we're going to hang them from the tallest tree and not apologize. These were human beings. These were people's brothers and sisters and children and cousins and so on. And we allowed that to happen. And this was the 1970s, 1970s when this happened. And I went, oh my, you think like, okay, well, maybe that was like 150 years ago
Right,
before
yeah.
we knew things. No, it was modern times. And we let down the most vulnerable of our population. And, I don't know, man. That just didn't sit right with me at all.
Oh,
And
yeah.
of course it's haunted. It should be haunted. And if this ghost show gets people a little bit uncomfortable, maybe there won't be another Pennhurst.
Right.
And that was my hope. I hope we accomplished that. Well, I mean, I hope we made people uncomfortable, because a ghost story isn't supposed to make you comfortable, right? It's supposed to make you uneasy for all kinds of reasons. And in this case, the reason was because on our watch, we allowed a place like that to exist. And, what if it was your kid or your
Yeah.
brother or your sister that was treated like that, kept in a cage or chained down? It was scary. And I remember being in that building. I've been in the building a few times now. It's a whole complex. I was there with Zach and my buddy Dave Schrader, and we didn't even start filming yet, but we went down into one of the tunnels that connect two of the buildings, and we're like, oh, it's so freaky down here. And then we were there 30 seconds. This rush of wind just goes whoosh, right by us. And then we heard this like giggle far off in the dark distance, and we just looked at each other and went, oh man. I mean, no cameras were around. We was just the three of us, and it was like, this building has something to say. And we're here to listen. And
Absolutely.
that's the power of a haunt. That's what it can do. Because you can't tell these stories out of context. You've got to set them historically. And Pennhurst was one that just, man, oh man, that was a powerful one for me.
Wow. Now, for the brilliant listeners out there who now are, they're inspired to go ghost adventure. That's the step one is you need to go to the local bookstore if you're lucky enough to have one. They're pretty rare, or go online and order the Encyclopedia of Haunted Places. That's the first thing you do.
That's a blast from the past.
after
Yeah.
that, what advice do you have for our ghost adventurers out there?
Go do it. Don't be a jerk because you reflect on all of us. So, ask permission, don't trespass. Because what happens is, you know how ghost hunters are, they break in and they break stuff. I'm in that group too. So, look out for all of us. It's incredible what doors will open when you just ask permission. When you say, "Hey, I'm doing paranormal research. I understand your building's haunted. I'd like to conduct an investigation. This is what it would entail. Could we come in?" And sometimes people get way into it and they go, "Yeah, absolutely. Let's figure out a time and a place and what do you need and whatever. And can you share your results with me?" Of course you can and you should, you don't need a lot of fancy equipment. Your phone probably has most of what you need on it. You've got an audio recorder, you've got a camera, you've got a video camera. That's plenty. Do your research online, know what happened in the place, and talk to people. Right? But listen, say, "Oh, you work here. Have you had an experience? What happened?" And then let them talk. Don't say, "Did you see a ghost? Was it a ghost? Would you call it a ghost? Or was it a demon?" You're don't lead the witness. Just let them tell you the story. My favorite witnesses always, always, always are the ones that go, "I don't believe in ghosts. I don't believe in any of this stuff. But I was working my rounds on security, and this wispy white woman floated into the room, came right up to me, and then disappeared." And I went, "Okay, we do not, if it makes you feel better, we do not have to call that a ghost." That's what I would call it. But by all means, if this is how you sleep at night, I won't mess with that. All right, cool. You saw something you can't explain that looked like a wispy white woman who vanished. Awesome. That's how it goes sometimes.
Like when a hunter's like, "I have no idea what I saw. It was 8 foot tall, stood on two legs, covered in hair. I got no idea what it could be." Like, really?
Feet
You
were
know?
big, but no, I know. And those stories, Bigfoot stories, I love those because that what you just described plays out over and over and over. And hunters pride themselves on being like, "Look, I've hunted these woods since I was a kid. 30 years I've been out here in tree stands. I have watched skunks and raccoons and porcupines and deer and every known critter stumble through. I've seen snakes. I know everything that walks in these woods." And nothing like that has ever come through. And think about wherever you live. If you lived anywhere for a little while, and a little while, let's say like a year, 1 year, wherever you live, you get to know what's around your home, right? You see brown squirrels, gray squirrels, you see the occasional raccoon in your garbage, whatever. You know the animals, right? I mean, I have a fisher in my woods, a fisher cat, come through sometimes and pretty rare, but you're like, "Whoa." When you see him, you're like, "Hey, you don't see that very often." I know what it is, though. But I've never seen an 8 foot tall hairy man traipse through my woods. Not yet. I mean, it'd be amazing. But it would stick out and you wouldn't miss it and you wouldn't forget it. And that's the thing. That's the thing about these encounters. Experiencers, they don't like to be called liars, just like none of us would. That I don't cotton to that. Call me a liar. You weren't there. I was there. This is what I saw. I can't tell you it's a Bigfoot. I can tell you what it looked like. And I know people get it's upsetting when someone tells you you're mistaken, you're a liar, and they weren't even there.
Somebody who lives on the other side of the country, and it
Oh
was an
God, this
owl.
right. That was Venus. That's swamp gas. And you're like,
Exactly, yeah.
"Have you ever seen swamp gas? Like, are you, what do you, you know, the planet Venus? I mean, I've seen it. It's the blue bright one in the sky, but it doesn't hover and come down and twirl and, no, it's very frustrating for people because people who call themselves skeptics, although how do you call yourself a skeptic if you've reached a conclusion without anything other than what someone told you? You're just like, "Well, here's what could have happened. Let's say you fell down and you accidentally ate a bunch of hallucinogenic mushrooms, and you didn't see it and you just ate them and swallowed them, and then like an hour later you're in the woods and you're tripping and you saw like this thing that you manufactured, then you sobered up but you still remembered the trip." And I'm like, "What? Does that ever happen to anyone?"
It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, it is sometimes, and it's like, but I get it. There's people that they sleep at night saying, I can explain away anything you possibly tell me because I don't want to live in a world where there could be ghosts or aliens from another world or creatures we don't already know about. I don't want to live in that world.
Right.
And so therefore you're mistaken. I'm right. You're wrong. And that's the end of it. And that's too bad.
And heck, for the people that are going out ghost hunting, if you like the gadgets and all that stuff, that's fine. However you
Sure.
enjoy it, however to have your best experience. But I don't know. I feel like, personally speaking, to get away from the screen so you can connect more and just experience it there. If you're watching it all on your screen or your monitor or I don't
Yeah.
know, it takes something away from it. But do what you do, however you do it. But that's my
How'd you
advice.
get into it, Alan?
I was just born this way.
Born to two ghosts.
Yeah, born to do ghosts.
Yeah.
I just always been into the dark and the macabre. I was reading Edgar Allan Poe in the third grade, and of all the things, we've only got one channel growing up, and there was a show called That's Incredible that came on.
Oh, classic, yeah.
Yeah, and that really got my mind thinking, like, there's more to everything. And yeah, I just kind of yeah it's more you get into it, the more you get into it. And I'd watch the things, and it never got deep enough, and I'm like, you know what, people write about this in books. So I started collecting all the books, and man, it just really opened everything up. And the one thing I've learned is there's no answers, just more questions.
That's true. But that's the fun of it too. If you're a person that needs everything black or white, the paranormal is probably not for you.
Right.
Because the reality is that it's a lot of gray area here,
Oh, yeah.
and people's belief systems sort of cloud what they think they experience. I was working on a UFO project and I had someone email me out of nowhere to tell me that, well, when you see a UFO, that's Satan putting that up there in the sky. And I went, oh, that explains it. Thank you. Not acknowledging that there are worlds out there that have been around for hundreds of millions of years earlier than us. And if intelligent life evolved there, they would be, I mean, imagine how far, think about this. What was it, 100 and 110, 115 years ago, the Wright brothers took to the sky for like 60 seconds,
Yeah, and then
and now we're sending like crafts to Mars and other planets, and probably put people there, hopefully in our lifetime. And that's just, well, let's say a century and a half, for all that stuff. Imagine 1,000 years, which isn't really that much either. Now imagine 100,000 years if we don't kill each other,
yes.
like holy moly, what we could do. So I don't think it's just that much of a stretch. And again, that's if they come from another planet. What if they're from another dimension that we don't fully understand? What if
Yeah.
that's us in the future, or some alternate universe checking in and bumping into us for a little bit? I don't know. I don't have the answers, but I love asking the questions and I love exploring it because you're like, hey, are we alone in the universe? What happens after we die? Do we know every creature in our world? And we think we have it all figured out. We think we're so smart, and that ego needs to be checked, because you'll stop growing if you think this is it. This is as far. This is okay. So today, this is as far as we go evolutionarily and technology and everything else. This is where we stop. Come on.
Yeah, it's the three most valuable words in scientific community or anywhere is I don't know.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with saying that. These are what it could be.
Yep.
Yeah, this rabbit hole is deep, and I'm here for it. I'm loving every minute of it. But
Yeah,
cocky younger Alan's like, I can get this figured out in 6 months,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I used to think the same thing. Well, I was talking to I was interviewed today by someone who's been doing, paranormal interviews for like 20 years, and I was like his eighth guest, and we were talking again today, and he said, I said, go back and listen to those early episodes. I knew so much more then than I do now. We're like, oh, well, ghosts are made of, electromagnetic energy. That's why your EMF meter goes off. I'm like, you know why we think that? We think that because, a guy named Harry Price in the early
Yes.
1900s, a Brit, was listening to psychics, and electricity was still sort of new, the spiritualist movement started in 1848, and then it sort of gained traction because of the Civil War. People were dying untimely
Yeah.
deaths. Folks wanted answers. A medium would give you the answers that your minister just couldn't. Hey, what happened to my son? I haven't heard from him in 3 months. It's in God's hands. Not good enough. So you'd go to a medium and say, where is he? And she would say, well, he's passed. Or, she might be right, she might be wrong, I don't know. But you'd get an answer, something more
Yeah.
definitive. And then when electricity started to really become a thing, psychics were like, this explains the powers we have. This is it, the energy. That's the energy we talk about. If you're literally seeing it light up a light bulb, this all makes sense now. It's all coming together. So people like Harry Price were using crude meters that could detect energy. Now we know we live on an Earth that's a giant electromagnet. Look behind you right now, Alan, up there in the sky. You see the northern lights?
Yeah.
It's because we live on a magnet, and the electromagnetic energy from the sun hits the atmosphere and it lights up and it swirls around. So think about this. But he didn't fully understand that back then, but he said, okay, psychic said this. I can test for that. We have equipment that can test for it. And then lo and behold, that stuff would go off and it'd say, whoa, that's weird, And we've been running with that ever since. Like,
Right.
that's a long time to not sort of rethink a theory.
I stepped on the scales this morning and thought, man, if I could communicate with the spirits, they wouldn't call me a medium, they'd call me a double extra large. And that was really uncalled for. I don't know why
Yeah, you
they
shouldn't be so
want,
mean to
yeah, it's
yourself.
so mean, the voices. But
Yeah.
well, we went to the grocery store, and this was still it's still in July, and the Halloween candy was popping out. And on one hand, I was a little excited because I love Halloween. I'm like, but I celebrate the dark and the macabre, all year round. The thing about Halloween is I think I like it better when it's more centralized, but to each their own. I'm still a little excited. But then we were leaving the next week, the Salvation Army bell ringers were there, and I'm like, okay, it's way too early to think about Christmas. It's
Yeah.
far too early. And then I got to thinking, like, well, maybe you need to get some Christmas shopping in, or you want to learn some more about the Yule. And it got me thinking about this incredible book that you wrote, The Fright Before Christmas. And that, Jeff, was a far damn walk for that segue.
Man, thanks. So Christmas has always been one of my favorite holidays. And I am a Halloween guy just like you, right? I adore the dark and spooky. But then Christmas sort of always balanced it out for me. When I was a kid, mind you. Later on, as I started to dive into this holiday, I went, oh no. Wait a minute. Wait a minute here. I've told folks, I've said, like, hey, look, if I'm in front of an audience and my audience is like your audience, I'm like, who
Right.
here, Halloween is their favorite holiday? And of course, like, every hand goes up. And I'd be like, okay, no, that's cool. If you were into the second most frightening holiday of the year, I'm not going to try to
Yes.
talk you out of it. That's okay. You enjoy the second most frightening holiday. But if you're ready to graduate to the big leagues, well, lend me your ears, folks, because it's Christmas, right? Halloween, the veil is thin. Ghosts can come into our world and meddle in our affairs. Ooh, ghosts, spooky. That scares me in the basement. Christmas, though, Christmas could literally kill you. There are monsters coming, and if you've been bad, you're going to die. Forget being scared, you're just dead. You're going to end up in a stew, eaten, beaten, or killed. So, anyway, if you want to go on loving Halloween, go right ahead. I say it's just the warm-up act for the main event, which is really Yule, the winter solstice, the shortest day, the longest night, the beginning of winter. I mean, you said earlier, Edgar Allan Poe. The Raven. When does the story take place? I remember the bleak December, right? It doesn't
Yeah.
take place in October. It takes place in December, the shortest, darkest, days. And that's not a coincidence. We tried to sugarcoat it. We tried to dress it up. Coca-Cola did its best, gave us Santa Claus and, so many jolly holly things and sugar and sweets, and that stuff's great too. But underneath it all is this idea that this winter solstice is coming. But it's also not just the monsters that are going to hunt us if we've been bad. There's also hope in that darkness. And how in the world can you see the light unless you're in a dark place?
Right.
And once you understand the full reason for Christmas, why it exists, why, you can put whatever label on it you want. If you're a Christian and you want to celebrate the birth of Jesus, December 25th, have at it, right? That was not when he was born. Only if you read the Bible. That's not my word, that's the Bible.
Right.
I can promise you it was not December. Again, according to the Bible. However, you're allowed to celebrate it any day you want. And when you start to understand and pick it apart how it got here, you realize, oh my, like what a mix mash of different beliefs and cultures and monsters and everything else that came together into this perfect storm that we now call Christmas, but has always been traditionally super pagan, super dark, and full of spooky monsters and ghost stories.
My son was his birthday is Krampus night, so he still made it this far. So,
December 5th. Yes,
yes,
that's awesome.
he's doing. He's still around, so I guess he's about 25 now. So I guess he's good. So.
I when I tell the story, Christmas stories, like especially in front of audiences, I'm just like, when I was a kid, my parents said, "If you're not good, Santa's going to bring you less presents," and that just isn't much of a threat, And did he really bring less? I don't know. What was I going to get? Right? I don't. There's no comparison. It's not like, here's what you're guaranteed if you're good. And oh, there goes the Atari game. Phew, gone. You've been bad. Oh no, now there's just four things left. I'm like, oh, there goes the whatever. So new bike, that's all that's left. Are you gonna be good? So imagine if my parents were like, oh no, you should be good. Otherwise, on December 5th, you're gonna hear chains rattling. This hairy monster with horns and hooves for feet is going to walk into your room and snatch you from your bed and stuff you in a sack and carry you off to his lair and beat you and maybe kill you. Be like, oh my. And so I tell people, hey, if your kid doesn't respond to less gifts from Santa, by all means, start introducing them to Krampus. Maybe you'll get better results.
Or when the neighbors used to dress up and go door to door and beat the kids' asses, that was probably as good too.
The Belschnickel.
Yeah.
So the Germans, man, Germans and Austrians, they really knew how to discipline. Belschnickel was one of my favorites. So it means Nicholas and furs, and each community would sort of have one, and you'd take turns. So you'd be like covered in this patchwork of furs. You might have soot on your face and be dirty, and you carry a switch of sticks, and you'd go to the house and say, "Any naughty kids here?" And you might be like, "Well, little Alan's been a bit of a brat this year," and I would take him out back and beat his ass, just whack, whack, whack. And you'd be like, "There's the Belschnickel. Better be good, so Santa can bring you gifts." And then you'd be crying, and I would leave and laugh, and you'd probably give me a drink, and I'd go to the next house. And I love that idea that he's sort of coming back. Did you ever watch The Office?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that show. That show was so much fun. I think it was called The Dwight Before Christmas, but Dwight Schrute played Belschnickel in
Yes.
The Office. And so you laugh and you say, "Oh, they did a deep cut on that one." But no, I think what it means is when you start seeing these characters popping up in Hollywood movies, in hit television shows like The Office, they're coming back. And they're coming back, I think, because we need them. We
Yeah.
need that darkness. We need the reminder. I think one of the greatest ghost stories ever told was Christmas Carol, right? Charles Dickens. It's a story I will consume every holiday season. I have a DVD of it that I love to watch, the Alistair Sim version. I think it was like 1954 or something. That's my personal favorite. I don't care if you watch the Muppet version or you watch it on stage, whatever. That story works over and over, because it is a frightening ghost story. And there's a point, of course, in the story near the end when it dawns on us who Scrooge is. And when we say, like, oh no, oh no, oh no, I know who Scrooge is. Me, I'm Scrooge. I'm getting older and cranky and miserly and bah humbug. But the hope is that Scrooge was redeemed in a single night. And that's what we want. We want redemption. And you can get redemption, but I don't know, man. I don't know who you hang out with, but the people I hang out with, they just can't be good for goodness sake. You got to scare them.
Right.
You
Need
know what I
some
mean?
incentive. Yeah.
I got to be like, hey, man, you've been eating a lot of double cheeseburgers. We're getting older. I'm worried about your heart. And they go, yeah. Then they have the heart attack.
And that's what.
And then they go, yeah, no more double cheeseburgers, right? And you go, see, you need the scare. That your doctor can say, if you keep this up, it's going to be bad. And you go, yeah, what do you know? And then it gets bad and you get scared and you see the light and you go, hey, redeemed. I'm going to start eating some vegetables, exercising, and change my ways for a while.
Right,
Until you're like, oh, that double cheeseburger is delicious.
absolutely. And this book also, this is just people to go check it out. It's gorgeous. It looks great on the mantle or on the coffee table. It's wonderfully illustrated, and I would get it before Christmas and tool up on it, but I couldn't
Thank
recommend
you.
it more to my listeners. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, no, it was so fun to work on, and that book did really well. It sells really well each holiday season, and it's fun to talk about it. I look for I'm minutes away from entering an absolute brutal run between like now and December.
Right.
Of like doing like media stuff, but doing a lot of live performances of these stories. And I say performances, that doesn't mean fiction. It just means there's sort of a dramatic telling of the tale. And I love it so much, but it's been fun to like do my Halloween stuff and then transition into the next thing, which is Christmas. And one of the things we always put on the flyers and stuff for people that want to see the Christmas show is, all caps, do not bring your young children.
Right.
Man, nothing puts butts in seats like that line right there. You know, because the Scrooges of the world walk by and go, Christmas show, humbug, do not bring your young children. Okay, wait a minute. I'm listening. The fright
Also,
before Christmas. All right. All right.
I'm in. Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of just gorgeous books, Wicked Strange, which hits the shelves on September 2nd, which maybe before or after, depending on when I upload this. But
Yeah.
oh, this book is amazing, and the Frank Grace's photography is incredible, and your stories are great. Like I was excited for it. The bar was set high, and I got it, and it just blew me away. So,
Thank you. Thank you.
tell us a couple of stories from it, or just tease us a
Sure.
little bit, because
Yeah, like let's I don't know. You got one you want me to talk about?
any of them, I reckon.
Yeah, Frank and I have been working together. We started doing a Haunted New England calendar every year, and he's such a great photographer. He can tell a story with a photo. A single photo
Oh yeah.
can just make you so uncomfortable. Like he's just amazing, and I've always been a big fan of his. And the calendar's been great. And we're like, we should do a book. We should do a book. And we kept talking about it, and then finally, we did it. And this is it. And you're holding it. You got the advanced copy. Look at
I
you.
did.
Oh God. Okay, here's one. So, Rhode Island, the Conemicut Point Lighthouse, to me is like one of the most tragic haunts that I'd ever worked on. There's lighthouses all over the New England coast, of course, just like lots of coastal communities, and a lot of them have haunted reputations. If you've ever stared at one, so I'm talking about the ones that are on like they're their own island. You know, it's just on a little crop of rocks. Not the if you're on a mainland, you can always drive into town or take a horse into town, whatever, you
Right.
know. But I mean the ones that are just out there on the water and nowhere to go except by boat. And Conemicut Point was just like barely half a mile off the coast, right near a place that was called Rocky Point Amusement Park, which was a big, vibrant amusement park for a long time. It's shut down for years now, but you've got this family that was there with two little kids, a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old. And you've got a kid. Remember when your kid was five?
Oh man.
Yeah, imagine if he had to stay in your house and only in your house. No yard to run in, no park to just like go get the energy out. Just sprint until you're exhausted, right? And in a small house at that, it's a little lighthouse.
Right.
And so you've got this job that's really boring, but also really important. You know, if there's ships at night, if there's a storm, they need to know where the land is. They need the light on. And so his wife was just begging, you know, can we please just move to, can we move to the mainland? You stay here. We'll see you on weekends, whatever. And they just couldn't afford it. Lighthouse keepers don't make much money. So one day he goes into town to get supplies. He takes the boat in, and as soon as he leaves, his wife poisoned herself and her two young children. And the oldest spit it out because it tasted bitter. And but when the by the time the lighthouse keeper came back, his wife was dead and his youngest son was dead, and his 5-year-old was really, really sick. So he snatched him up, brought him to the mainland, got him to the hospital, and thankfully he was okay. He recovered, but he could never go back to his job, never go back to the lighthouse, and yet someone had to do that job tomorrow night, even though a mother and her baby was removed there. Literally like this morning, someone has to go and light the light tonight. And that place had a haunted reputation ever since, even when the Coast Guard took over, as they took over all lighthouses. In the 1950s, there was a story of a Coast Guardman that was staying in the guest quarters, and he had said in the morning, like, "Hey, I noticed the lady of the house came and opened my door in the middle of the night and checked on me. What was that about?" And she said, "I really didn't. That would have been, that's our ghost." And now the lighthouse is automated. It's not safe to be inside of it, but it's close enough to land that you can stand on the edge of the water and you can get a good look at it even with your naked eye. And it's, I mean, man, it's when you know what happened there, and imagine like most days that job is just so dull and boring, and it was more than she could take. More than her sanity could handle, to the point where she took her own life and tried to kill both of her children, but succeeded in killing one. And it made the papers, and it's such a tragic thing, but it's also part of how America grew up, right? We need we needed lighthouses, and we needed people in those lighthouses to keep them lit. And that's one of those things where you're just like, this is part of how we got here, and part of why it'll probably forever be haunted.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one other story, which I don't want to give too much away. People need to go buy this thing 'cause it's awesome.
There's 102 in it. We're not covering them all. It's all right.
But I love tombstones. I love graveyards, and like you say in your show, if you want to be remembered forever, put something clever on there. But the super tall one where the guy named names and blamed
Oh God, yeah.
the
So yeah, we called that. That's in New Hampshire. It was called it, we called it a tombstone tirade.
Yeah.
So what happened was there was anyone who's ever belonged to like a church community, I think, can relate. So, people think of like church communities as just good people and doing good work, and sometimes it gets a little political, and they all do. None are immune, right? So there was a guy that was he was trying to raise money for a new church, the bigger church, which is fine, that's great. But what he was doing was he was telling people, "I'll put up the money, you put in this much, I'll put up the rest, whatever." And he was taking in money, and people started accusing him of stealing some of it. And he was using his wife to try to influence the other wives, to influence their husbands to do the donations. And there became this big political fight within the leadership of the church. Like, let me be in charge of the new church. And then the existing, ministers and deacons were saying, "No, we don't like this. We're hearing some bad things." And eventually, the husband and wife were kicked out of the church. She died a short while later. And instead of saying loving wife and mother, it's like 150 words, like that fills this entire tombstone that just says she was killed, right, by the drama caused by, and she's named like six or seven names. And all I could think of is, you look at this, and this was from the 1800s, so it feels like forever ago. But imagine if it was today, and imagine if your name was on it. You know what I mean? Imagine if someone's just like, "Alan Brill is such a jerk." And everybody could see it right there on the tombstone forever in stone. And you're like, "Alan, what did you do, man? Look at this thing. Says you killed her. Did you kill her?" "No, man, I didn't kill her. They were stealing. We kicked them out of the church." Oh my God. And so when you put it in that context, and this is a small town in New Hampshire, we're not talking some big city. Everyone in town would have known all about this in about 4 minutes, and that was before newspapers and magazines and radio and internet and everything. That was just the Coconut Telegraph just being like, "Y'all got to come see this headstone. You're not gonna believe it." I love it. What a guy.
Oh
Thanks,
yeah.
hubby. He remarried, by the way.
Well,
Yeah.
this book's great. And again, it's going to look great on your coffee table, and people are going to stop by, flip through it. You're going to have instant conversation starter right there, anywhere you flip in this
Yeah.
book.
No, and look, this is just New England weirdness because this is where I live and
Right.
it's accessible for me, but I know these stories. There's something similar everywhere, you know.
Right.
There's
That's.
yeah, and that's the hope. Like, hey, you got weirdness in your own town. You just got to ask, or you probably already know, maybe, you know. And it's such a fun way to look at communities. It's a great perspective on people and who we are as a town, a community, a state, and so on.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. I've taken up enough of your time. Super appreciate it, though.
Thanks for asking.
Could keep you here all day. It was a fun conversation, man.
Yeah, thank you. And I wish you the best with your podcast.
Oh,
Like
thank
I
you. Thank you.
so when I said before, I should have closed the loop on that. Let me do it now. This is a good way to end. When I said like eight people control most of the internet, I believe that. And I think we got to take it back. We got to take it back by just you need to seek out independent voices. You need to go, you know, stop getting what they're spoon feeding you. Podcasts, however, are still a place where you can just rise to the top. It's not controlled by, you know, I mean, yeah, sure, there's big media companies that do podcasts, but you can just literally start in your basement and you find your audience finds you, and it can grow no matter what someone at Facebook or Twitter or whatever does. And I believe in this medium big time because I know how special it is and how intimate it is. Right? It's just you and me, Alan, and like one other person listening right now. And I'm
Right.
not saying you have no audience. I just
No,
mean
that's
that,
pretty accurate.
yeah, that's good. Well, I'm going to tell my mom you probably just doubled at least,
There we
right?
go.
So, but think about that, right? It's just such a cool, intimate conversation just between us and one other person. And because that's what a podcast is. It's not a broadcast. It's not happening where everyone has to listen right now live. It's listening whenever they want. So each individual is happening right now. And man, that's cool. And that's why it's so popular, because we find these podcasts that we connect to and hosts that we connect to, and we eat them up. They commute with us in the car to work. They're with us when we're doing our chores, or you know, when we're just exercising and have our headphones in. And that's pretty cool, the relationships that form, you know, between us and people in our community. So I have hope. I have hope that this is one of those medias that will survive, and until the billionaires figure out how to control this too,
Right.
which you know they're working on.
Oh
So
yeah.
hurry up.
And
Hurry up and subscribe now before they won't let you.
anybody can have a voice. Like, I needed a purpose or a direction, and step one, find something you're passionate about, and had a laptop, and then don't mean to brag, I got the third finest microphone the electronics department at Walmart had to offer. And
Not bad. Yeah. Yeah.
and th there you go, internet connection, and you're off. Yeah.
That's all it is. And I think it's great. No, I appreciate you asking, and thanks for, you know, getting the zine and reading the book. I love this stuff, and I know I don't have all the answers, but I do think the more discussions we have, the further along we can get.
I agree. Again, well, thank you so much, man. And hopefully, some point, we can talk to you later.
Sounds good, Alan.
All right. Man, what a great conversation and a great guy. Go out there, buy his new book, Wicked Strange. It really is wonderful. I promise you'll enjoy it. And as you head back out into the real world this week, be careful because it can get dark out there.